Sounds good.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. Today, Lori and I have a guest. We want to welcome Esther Zimmerman. Oh boy, almost messed up her name. She is an AKC judge. And to be quite honest with you, that is probably the most I know about her other than talking to her briefly in a parking lot one time. But I thought it was really important for us to have a judge on the podcast just so we could get their perspective on things. So I'm going to let Esther tell us all about who she is, how she got into dogs, and whatever she feels like sharing with Lori and I.
Well, thank you, Petra and Lori, for inviting me. I'm very flattered that you picked me out of all the judges in the country that you know to do this with you. I have been competing in obedience trials since 1976,
almost
50 years. I stepped into the novice A ring. Yes, longer than you've been alive, Lori, maybe.
Yes.
I stepped into the ring with my 10-year-old German Shepherd.
Wow.
That I got out of an advertisement in a newspaper when she was not quite a year old.
That's so cool.
And I took high in trial.
From wow. Wow.
In the August of 76, it was a blazing hot day, and she won her class and she took high in trial. Talk about hook, line, and sinker. I have trained dogs my whole life, even before I owned a dog. I grew up in New York City in the Bronx, and every superintendent in the building had a dog. And I always took that dog and did stuff with it.
Nice.
Cool.
And when I got Juno, my German Shepherd, I went to the library, and every week I took a different dog training book out of the library, and I did that. Whatever that book said, that's what we did. And she was a nervous Nelly, but whatever I asked her to do, she tried to do. She was an amazing little dog, jumping 32 inches back in those days.
Wow, yeah.
My little German Shepherd. Anyway, so when I got married and moved to the Boston area, we joined New England Dog Training Club and took classes there. And a bunch of other clubs in the New England area, Shrewsbury Dog Training Club, which doesn't exist anymore, Concord, Charles River. Yeah, we made the rounds training. And I started instructing, doing handling classes for Farmington Valley Kennel Club. I did that for a while until they fired me because I wouldn't check to see if people had their rabies certificates or not. I said, it's the law, and I'm not a policeman.
Did you show in confirmation?
I did. So
oh, you did. What breed?
Five of my skipper keys are champions with obedience title. I have the only champion UDX skipper key in the country,
cool.
And he was breeder, owner, handled to everything.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that.
You should be, yeah.
So I started teaching obedience classes, and I've been doing that pretty much nonstop. And I'm addicted to the sport. I'm passionate about the sport. It's my favorite of all the things that I do with the dogs. It's what I absolutely love. And I've been judging now for about 15 years.
So what made you decide to be a judge?
That's a good question. Well, seriously, because I wanted to give back to the sport partially.
Nice.
And it was a challenge for me. And both of you will remember Bill Thane.
Mm-hmm.
I went to one of his judges' seminars when they still did them in person. And they showed the demo video of a dog doing stuff. And he asked people questions. And I raised my hand and I said, that's the reason, the video, that's the reason I will never be a judge. Because the only time that dog was in heel position is when he was passing through. Either going ahead of him or going behind him. I said, I don't understand how you could pass that. Well, never say never, because he encouraged me to start the process. And I judged it. The show and goes and matches that we had at the training facility. And
Well, let's not gloss over, because I think this is really important, because I didn't really know how you become a judge. Like, I had a kind of a vague idea. And then I know it might have changed a bit, but still. Then there, a person I know that I train with now periodically, she decided to become a judge. And I was like, oh, you have to do all that?
It's
to become a judge?
Quite a process, and it's
much
easier now.
Yeah, so can you talk us through the whole process?
So anybody can apply for a judge's number, which it's a simple form you fill out, which would allow you to judge non-regular classes at trials. You don't have to have any particular qualifications, but non-regular classes, which would be veterans, mm-hmm. wild card, those mm-hmm. kind of classes. Mm-hmm. So you make application and you start by apprenticing. We don't have to do this anymore. This is one of the changes that the AKC has done that I think is a real detriment to the sport. We had to apprentice for each level under 10 different judges.
Wow.
And then you would sit down and compare your scoring to their scoring and talk about what you saw, what they saw. You ask them questions.
On your own time, by the way.
On your own time and your own dime.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. You don't get paid for any of that. Yeah. And you have to have permission from the club to do it. Mm. They never say no, but you still have to ask permission. Mm-hmm. And the judge has to agree to do it. There are some judges who really did not like to be the judge you mm-hmm. apprenticed under because they didn't want to have to justify their scores or your scores. So you did that under 10 judges. You had to steward. You had to keep track of stewarding X number of trials, which actually is an awesome way to learn about what's going on.
Yeah, I agree.
If you can be the table steward,
you see it all.
You mm-hmm. see it all, and you have the little side conversations with the judge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So stewarding still is super, super important.
Still on your own still on your own time and on your own dime.
You don't get anything mm-hmm. for most of this.
I just think it's important for people to understand that you guys are basically volunteering.
I'm not retiring on the money I make mm-hmm. from judging.
I know.
That's a fact.
Agreed.
So you apprentice, then you apply for provisional status. And you have to take a test. You have to pass the test 70%, 75%, something like that. And you have to be interviewed by the AKC rep. So this was a really interesting to me thing. When I had my exam with Bill Thane, he asked me, what did I think was the most important characteristic of an obedience judge? And I said, good ring practice. He said, yes, that's true, but that's not it. I said, thorough knowledge of the rules and regs. He said, yes, that's important.
You were like, is this a trick question?
And that's what I said to him. I said something else, and I said, okay, Bill, what would you like me to say?
Right.
He said, be nice.
Yeah.
That's it. And these days we would say be kind, right?
Yeah.
All you have to do to make somebody feel good about a bad run in the ring is to tell them that they had a lovely dog, they did a nice job, you're going to do better next time. And that will change their frown into a smile when you just say something nice uh-huh. to them about their dog. Because that's all they care about, that you like their dog. So after you pass your exam, you can take judging assignments. You can let the clubs in your area, people that you know that are influential, know that you're available for judging. And then they reach out to you and ask you if you'd like to judge the novice classes for their trial. Most of the time, you don't get paid when you're an apprentice, when you're a provisional judge, excuse me. Sometimes the clubs will give you something. They'll give you lunch and sometimes a gift card at the end. and you have to judge, again, it's changed a little bit. The numbers are different. You have to judge 150 dogs for the class you're applying for. And you have to have two observations by an AKC rep who sits at ringside, watches you judge the class, and then they compare their score with your score. And they tell you all the things that you did wrong. They rarely tell you the things you did right, but they tell you all the things you did wrong. And you have to have two of those, and you have to pass both of them. Then you apply to become a regular status judge for that class. So that's novice. Uh-huh. Then you have to go through the whole thing again for open.
And again for utility.
And again for utility. And it's a real challenge because there are not enough reps available to get themselves around the country to observe people.
So going from novice to utility takes a while.
It takes a real while. It depends partially on where you live. So I'm in New England. There are trials all over the place in New York, mid-Atlantic. We have tons of trials in the course of a year.
Yeah.
So you've got a better shot at, number one, being asked to judge and having a rep be at the trial. One of my friends who's a judge, it took her, I think it was almost 2 years before she got her observations. She was judging utility a lot. She had judged like 300 and some odd dogs before she ever got her observation. Wow. Yeah. And around here, so the smaller clubs, sometimes I waive my fees, sometimes I charge less. One of the clubs around here, they do 4-hour trials. That's all. And you can't charge them the same as you would for a whole day of judging.
Right.
So it is easier now. You don't have to apprentice, although anybody that's thinking of becoming a judge, you can do it. It's just not a requirement. I can't encourage people enough to sit at ringside for a whole day or for the entire class with paper and pen and score what you see. And most judges on an informal, casual basis will be happy to go over some of it with you. And that's how you learn. So an important point about that, like we were talking earlier about ringside judging. A judge can only be in one spot at a time. Uh-huh. And especially on healing, you can't always be in the perfect spot to see everything. So if you're sitting at ringside and you see that the dog lagged on the about turn, I may not be in a position to actually observe that. So if I didn't see it, I can't score it.
Right.
And it's not guesswork. You don't assume anything. You have to see it. So from ringside, you may see a dog bump the handler maybe on a finish. I may not see that just because I can't be in every place all the time. There are better and worse places for a judge to position themselves. And the AKC does give us guidelines about that. And we follow them to the best of our ability, but not every judge follows those rules. The big one is you're not supposed to be directly behind the dog on exercises like signals, drop on recall. You need to be off to the side a little bit to be able to see the dog and handler without interfering with the dog. So all the emphasis that you put on having the dog deal with pressure is super important, because not every judge is as sensitive to being in the right place without causing the dog to worry unnecessarily.
Well, you know what's crazy to me? This is why I know for a fact that I could not be a judge, because I have a really hard time focusing on one thing at a time, like a really hard time. So for example, one of the things like that you just said, where you have to stand there a little off to the side and see both things at the same time. Like when I train with somebody, I'll do that. I'll be like, okay, I'm watching both. But I feel like it's almost impossible to watch both simultaneously every second, because I feel like my eyes flick like back and forth. Like it's just super hard. And then when I'm at a trial, I have not once been able to watch an entire, so I'm watching it, right, to see where everything is, where's the setup point, and God damn it, every freaking time, halfway through, I'm off to the races doing something else. Yeah. And it'll take me like three dogs sometimes before I can watch the whole thing. And you're expecting a person to stand there for 8 hours and continuously pay intense attention to every second of everything that's happening in that ring, and to be able to do that exactly the same the entire day. I feel like that's now you almost understand.
You feel like she needs more money. More money.
My friends test. They're not paying you. They're just giving you an honorary.
Well, aside from what you're saying, Petra, what I always think about is, especially for healing, you're having to watch the dog, the handler.
Call it,
and remember and score it. Like, no way. Like, and that
not,
is...
And not run them into the gate. What?
There's a reason. You know, people say, what can you tell me about this judge or that judge? Most of us do the same healing pattern every time we judge.
Because it's just easier.
Because then we don't have to remember.
And think about it so much.
I'm doing it this way this time. So I have my set healing patterns that I do for novice and open. And I have a different one that I do for utility. But it's the same. So if somebody asks you, what is Esther Zimmerman's healing pattern? You could tell them if you've shown under me a couple of times.
I could.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always think too, like, there's got to be a split brain thing going on too. If there's a questionable second of when you're judging in your head, where you're like, oh God, how do I score that? Like that, like, just would derail my whole thought process and concentration.
Well, you can understand why sometimes we do make mistakes.
Exactly.
We do make mistakes.
Well, that's where I think there's underappreciated, of what you guys are rolling.
Sheet and making a note about that thing that
the heck was that? Esther, just stay a little bit closer to your whatever, because your volume goes in and out. Okay. Just a little bit. Yeah, thanks.
Is that a little better?
Yep, better. Yep.
Okay. If I'm looking at my score sheet, I'm not looking at you. And
right.
If I'm not looking at you, and you thump your dog on the head because they weren't paying attention, I might miss that. Because you can't see everything.
I think, and that's where, you know, you just kind of hear. I feel sometimes there's this whole feeling of like, the judges, there's like a misconception of the judges when the scoring takes place and somebody places higher than the other person or whatever. And there's always that like sideline stuff going on where, oh, well, that, you know, that lady, you know, that dog obviously lagged and blah, 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 blah. And I think that's where at the end of the day, like, we have to always take into consideration the amount of focus it's taking you guys to have to really dial in to see everything. And you're not going to see everything. Like, you guys are human beings.
But when I started judging, the word on the street was that I had a very sharp pencil.
Which is
and
fair.
And my response to that is, I don't have a sharp pencil, but I don't miss much.
And yeah, I remember having that conversation with you.
Yes, right? I don't miss much. And I score things that perhaps other judges, sometimes they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that can go two ways. As a judge, if you had a dog that really struggled on the drop on recall, let's say, you might approach evaluating that exercise as a judge in one of two ways. Either you're super sympathetic to the problem and you take a slightly softer approach to judging it, or you might go, I worked my butt off to make sure my dog did a good drop on recall. You should be doing the same thing and really score it. Somebody sounds like they're having fun there.
That might have been my
I think that's a super good point too, because again, right, like, you, well, there are two things. One is, you know, there are the rules, right? But the rules, there's always a little bit of interpretation there.
Yep.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
It's impossible to be absolutely black and white. And like you said, so interpretation is going to be based on what? We're humans. Every life human has a different experience, right? Yep. So whatever your experience is, whatever your belief system is, whatever you value or whatever, basically what you explained, right? That's how you're going to judge that piece or that exercise or whatever. And that's always going to be there. And that's just part of any sport, pretty much, right? Unless it's something that's purely timed and then the timer has to be perfect, right? Then there can be no margin for error.
Exercises that are black and white. If your dog didn't go down on the drop on recall, UNQ. Mm-hmm. If your dog brings back the wrong article, UNQ.
It's wrong, right?
If your dog doesn't let me touch it on the stand for exam, that's an NQ, right? Certain things are pretty black and white.
Right.
But healing is the toughest. That's a fact. So you touched on the rules. I think every exhibitor needs to familiarize themselves with the rules and regs. We see these questions all the time on the competition obedience group. What do you do about this? How do you score that? And people will go, leave the rules and regs. Well, that's easier said than done. They're horrible. They're absolutely horrible. And just finding the answer to the question can be really challenging if you don't know. So what I tell people about the rules and regs is this. Read chapter 2. That's the most important chapter in the book is chapter 2. Because that's where everything is laid out. What can you do with your leash? What do you have to do with your hands? What constitutes a proper signal or verbal? Right.
A lot of the handling stuff.
A lot of the
covered.
Handling stuff is in chapter 2. Then read the chapter that applies to the class you're in, but not the whole thing. The first sentence of the explanation, the description of the exercise, tells you the principal features of the exercise. Read that, understand what that is, and ignore the whole rest of that section, because most of that is instructions to the judge on how to do their part. But what you have to really read is the scoring section. You should know pretty well what constitutes a non-qualifying score, what is going to get you a substantial deduction or a minor deduction. That's also where you get the bulk of your information. And you should know when you go in the ring if what just happened constitutes an NQ or not. So you then know how to proceed, right? Because you're going to handle your dog differently if you NQ on an exercise early in the class. You may help your dog more as you go on. You may give them additional cues. Now, that speaks to training in the ring. This is a big thing of mine, the whole idea of going in another tangent.
That's okay.
Fix and go. It's a great idea. People do not know how to use it.
Agree.
They do not know how to use it. You have to have a plan. Look, you go in the ring, you hope to qualify, but you also know the places where your dog is likely to make a mistake, right? We all know that. Your dog's likely to do this, that, or the other thing. So signals is the best example. You leave your dog on the stand, you walk away, you give him the signal to drop. He doesn't drop. You can, and people, the experienced people do, will immediately either give them another signal or tell them down or something. That is, technically speaking, training in the ring. But everybody does it, and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than a fix and go, where you might go back and do a little bit of the healing and then not go so far and give your dog a verbal and a signal. Those are the types of things you see what people do. And then you're done. You can't go on. You're done. You're out of the ring. Right?
Yes.
So if you're going to use fix and go, you have to have a plan before you go in the ring. If my dog does this, I'm going to respond in this fashion. And maybe you're just going to ignore the error. That's an option too. But you may have some way that you're going to convey to your dog how to be better. Most of the time, I think people use it badly. They may just, I don't know why I always pick on the drop on recall. Maybe because it's challenging to get perfect. If your dog drops at your feet and you say, fix and go, and you go back and you do exactly the same thing, exactly the same way, and don't give your dog any additional information, it's going to drop at your feet again. And now it's done it twice in the ring and nothing bad happened to them.
And you don't,
and they go, okay, dropping at your feet appears to be an okay thing to do.
Well, because like you said, people don't have a plan, right? And I always tell people, wishing, hoping, praying is not an effective training strategy.
It is not.
It never works. I've tried it. I promise you it will not work. So like, but I think a lot of times too, people are a little bit like delusional. Like they, as soon as I hear somebody outside the ring saying, well, my dog does it sometimes, hopefully he'll do it today. Well, I can practically guarantee you your dog is not going to do it, right?
It is not like, going to.
It's just not going to happen.
I would put money on that. I would put my judging fee on that.
Same. And
another option, though.
Yeah, you need a plan.
If your dog screwed up, another option is to just say, thank you very much. We're going to leave now. You don't have to be excused. You just say, we're done for today. Thank you so much. I'll come back and show under you when I have my problem fixed.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of options, but yeah. I just want to circle back, though, to the armchair quarterbacks. Like, when I'm training with somebody or, like, running them through, right? So, for example, if I'm training with Lori and like, from my vantage point, if I'm being her quote-unquote judge, I can see her, let's take a front, right? Like, I can see every detail of that. So if it's slightly off, I can see that. Uh-huh. If it's slightly off, very good chance that my other training partner, Carl, cannot see that from outside the ring.
Uh-huh.
To him, it might look straight, right? And he might... Or as a handler, you might like look down and think, oh, that's straight, but maybe it wasn't, right? So I think a lot of times people forget that if you're watching from outside the ring, that you're not looking at every exercise with the same perspective as a judge. You're looking at it from a completely different angle.
Right.
And you don't get to move around and evaluate it from different angles. But there are better and worse places for a judge to stand to evaluate any exercise, and that's really, really important.
Can I ask for a lot of our listeners who are just starting to compete for the first time, how maybe give an example or some advice on what you would say to them on a good way to use the fix and go?
No. I don't want to talk about fix and go. I want to talk about friggin' setups.
Okay, we can go to setups.
Oh, my God. You need to be able to come in the ring and have your dog set up.
Oh, boy, she's been waiting to talk about this one.
Well, because I don't think that's taught. Like, I feel like those pieces in between.
Oh, stop. Go away.
It's all right. I feel like those pieces in between, it's almost like they don't even know that they need to know.
They just wander away from their dog. There's no connection. But when, let's say I judge in a different part of the country and competitor A comes in the ring and says, come on, dog, come set up, sit. They turn around in a circle, try and get them to sit again. They get in front of them and they use their hand signals and whatever to try and get the dog to sit. And then it's not straight. They want them to get it straight. And at some point I'm like, the next time your dog stops, I'm going to say forward and you just go. I've already scored all of that because that's misbehavior, right? Mm. Which is scorable. That's just misbehavior. So every setup, your dog needs to be able to get into a good setup. Now, the next exhibitor comes in. They already greeted me from outside of the ring. They come in, they march over to where they know the first exercise is starting. The dog snaps into heel position. I straighten up. I sharpen my pencil because I know that that team is going to do a good job because that's the precursor to the whole thing.
Right.
Come in the ring, set up, be ready to go. It's funny you said you lose track of where you're supposed to go. Know where you're supposed to go, at least for the first exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that because when I showed Zesty and Novice not so long ago, because I forget, because there's a big gap between my dogs, you know. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, I wanted to just get up and help them all, because I'm like, there's so many holes in their training that I know they're not even aware of. And I don't know why. I don't know if it has to do with training or just maybe the instructor tells them and it doesn't click because, you know, they don't understand. But
well, there's the stress for beginner people.
Yeah, that's
there's
true, too.
Super stress of being in unfamiliar territory.
Yeah.
Really knowing
good
what's going to happen.
The anxiety cloud, I call it, and they can't even think.
You know,
straight.
They've gone to the bathroom 27 times in the last hour.
Yeah.
You know, they feel sick to their stomach.
I still do
sweating.
That.
Sweating. They have drugs for that, Lori. But back to your question. So for a novice A person, I try to be very kind to the novice A people. I know they're nervous. Mm-hmm. And I keep my distance from them as best I can. I give them extra time if they need it to set up. I try not to pressure them unduly. I can't stand there forever waiting for them to get their dog to set up. Mm-hmm. But I give them time. And I the transition from the figure eight to the stand for exam. Mm-hmm. I leash off, give it to me or the steward or whatever we're doing in that class. And I say, just go set up wherever you set up is okay. I will adjust myself to you and your dog. I don't care where you're facing. Let's just get the stand for exam done. But I don't know exactly how to put this. The best way to deal with your ring nerves is being comfortable with what your job is, where you're supposed to go, what mm-hmm. your dog is supposed to do. Maybe they don't heal that great, but they heal with you. They're sort mm-hmm. of in the general vicinity. They change pace. But if you don't know what the requirements are, how far are you supposed to go from your dog on the stand for exam? It's really disconcerting if the judge has to tell you to take a step back or take a step forward because mm-hmm. you went too far or not far enough. Mm-hmm. Well, that's only going to make you feel worse about the whole experience because now you screwed up. So familiarity of the important parts of what the rules say goes a long way to making you more comfortable in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Matches are far and few between. Run-throughs, show-and-goes are far and few between. And when groups have them, frequently, the person calling commands hasn't got the faintest idea where they should be, what the words are. You know, it's not return to your dog. It's back to your dog.
Well, the nice thing now that people have, which, you know, I didn't have back in the day, is like YouTube. Like there are novice runs out there.
Yep.
Right? So you can watch YouTube runs and you can turn up the volume and you can listen to. So obviously, like what you said, goes way back to what you said at the beginning, read the rules, know the rules, right? And if you don't understand, then just ask somebody to help you. Again, Facebook, if you go on a decent group, you know, I mean, some are everyone just yelling at everybody else, but if you go on a decent group, or if you ask someone that you're familiar with their name or something, hey, they'll, like, if someone asked me, I'd be more than happy to clarify a rule, right, you know, something for them. So you can ask, but for sure you can go and you can watch runs and you can see all those pieces in between. In the comfort of your own living room. And then you'll go, oh, I need to work on that piece, or I need to, because like you said, if at least you know what you're doing, that's going to help you so much more.
Yeah.
And that's going to help your nerves as well, right? Right.
So one of my bugaboos is when people frequently come and ask me about the rules, which I welcome. But when they say to me, I was training with my friends the other day, and this came up as a question, and this is what one person said, and this is what another person said. What do you think? I said, did anybody bother to get the rules and regs out and see exactly what the wording is? Because the wording matters, right? Verbal and or signal, or verbal or signal, That's pretty clear, but only if you look it up and you know exactly what the language in the book is. If you have a question, look for it. Now, you may not be able to find the answer because some of the nuggets are really hidden in that little black book. But if you didn't even look for it and you're debating about whether something is scorable or not, shame on you. Take a look and ask the question online. There are tons of places you can get the information. But even there, when you're first starting out, you're not aware of all the resources that are available to you free of charge. So hopefully you have an instructor or you're at a club and people can help you figure some of that stuff out. But if you have a question about the rules, you need to look at the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to take responsibility, right? A lot of people don't want to take responsibility for themselves or for their job or for their part in being a teammate, right? Like if I want to be a good teammate to my dog, then it's my responsibility to get all that information, because until Zesty learns how to read, kind of falls on me.
So one of the challenges for me personally as a judge is that I am a natural born teacher. I would love to be able to help everybody in the ring, mm-hmm. but that's not my job and I'm not allowed to do that. I cannot say if you had done thus and such, it would have had a different outcome, but you can go and ask the judge and you should accept, you know, you and the two of you have a pretty good idea of where you lost your points. But the judge can tell you where you lost the points. And people frequently assume that it's for this when in fact it was for that. Mm-hmm. And if you don't come and ask the judge, you may think that you lost points on healing because your dog didn't sit straight, when in fact you lost your points because he went wide on both the about turns. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me. If you don't ask me, you won't know for a fact what I took points off for. Now, not every judge is amenable to answering a whole bunch of questions. I understand that, too, because at the end of a class or at the end of the day, we're tired. We'd like to sit down. Thank you very much.
Well, but also it's your approach. Like way back in the day, I was taught, and this was, you know, I didn't know as much. So it was like, if you're not sure where you lost your points, you're, you know, totally that I would be encouraged to go ask the judge. But I was encouraged to ask the judge nicely and politely with the, you know, with the sole purpose being to gather information so that I could improve my training and I could improve my handling. Not to confront the judge, not to argue with the judge, not to tell the judge they're wrong or, you know, challenge them. And I think that's a problem that people do. Like, again, you're volunteering your time. You're doing the very best job you can. And you should ask that person politely, get the information and take it. If you choose to disagree, do that on your own time away from the judge. Exactly. Like on your, call your friends on the drive home and bitch about it. But
that's right.
Do not confront the judge because that's just not, it's poor sportsmanship.
Agree.
That's a huge pet peeve that I have. It's very poor sportsmanship. Take the information. Go be a better trainer, take the information, go be a better handler. And absolute worst case, if you feel so strongly about it, then guess what? You have the right to never show under that judge again. That's your choice. But you do not have a right to argue with that judge, challenge the judge, confront the judge, try to intimidate the judge.
Yep.
That's inappropriate.
Yep. Yeah. So here's the thing. So if you get really in the judge's face, if you get argumentative with the judge, you could have a bench committee called on you. You could get suspended from showing for X amount of time if they felt it was unwarranted. And if you think the dog made some really, the judge, I'm sorry, made some really egregious error, you can write to the AKC. Mm-hmm, so here's the procedure for that. So I can't even think of a good example here, but the judge made what you felt was an inappropriate judging decision, or they did something dumb in the ring and you feel that they should be reprimanded, you can write to the AKC. If you choose to do that, you do like Dragnet, just the facts, ma'am. Uh-huh. I showed my dog in open B at this trial on this date under this judge. This is what happened. I believe that it was a judging error or inappropriate ring procedure, and I thought you should know. The AKC will write back to you and say thank you. That's it. But the AKC will absolutely contact the judge and say, we got a notice, we got a letter, an email from this person who says you did that in the ring. Did you? And the judge will say, no, I didn't do that. Okay, that will be the end of it. Or the judge will say, yes, I did. And the person from the AKC will say, well, don't do that again because that was wrong. Uh-huh. The exhibitor will not know the outcome of that conversation between the AKC and the judge. And the AKC will not tell the judge that Petra Ford wrote to us and told you you did this. Uh-huh. Although it's pretty easy to figure out based on what it was. Yeah, you know, that lady with the black Labrador, it jumped up and bit her hair or whatever.
That would not be good.
No, that would not be good. But you have that right to write to the AKC with a complaint.
Yeah.
And sometimes that will help the judge do better the next time. Because I'm here to tell you, I love judging. I really love judging. I was so sorry I couldn't make it to the NOC this year. I was so looking forward to that. That was the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
But I love judging. It's worth it to me to try and help the exhibitor have a good experience in the ring. I'm rooting for every single person that steps through the gates and comes into my ring. I want everybody to qualify. I want the club to run out of green ribbons. Yeah, because I want them to love it just as much as I do.
I think that's like the most important point, right? Because people have this super weird thing about the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that even? Like, they're people, you know? And I think in their mind, it's like them against the judge, or like the judge is out to get them because the judge is like, so, you know, that just, and they're just people trying to do the right thing. And I've seen countless judges where they're like the dog struggling, and I can see the judge is like, come on, dog, you know, like I can tell they're rooting for the dog. Yeah. Or sometimes they'll even try to nudge the handler, like, do this,
do something.
Do that.
Do
help the dog out.
Do something.
You know?
Don't just stand there.
Yeah. Or if a dog does make a mistake, like I've had times where my dog's flunked, and I swear to God, the judge is more upset than I am. Yeah. Oh my God. The judge will be like, I'm so sorry.
Okay, but I try not to respond that way because that has an effect on the dog too, right?
That's
if
true.
If we throw our arms up in the air and with the clipboard and go, oh my God, I can't believe your dog did that, right? So I try and stay as neutral as possible and not put pressure on either the dog or the handler to do something. You see it a lot on articles when dogs freeze. The judge tries to move in a little bit to get
and
the dog moving
makes
again.
Makes it worse.
It makes I take a step away.
Yeah.
Thinking that maybe I'm a little too close for that particular dog.
But even when judges do that, you know, and then sometimes people come, it's like, I know they're like, and then people are like, oh, why did the judge do that? Blah, blah. I'm like, they're not doing, they're, maybe it's not the best choice, but still they're doing it because they're trying to be helpful. They're not doing it because they're trying to mess you up.
Yeah, unfortunately,
they're trying to mess
that's
your
not
dog
our job.
Up. No, like your job is you volunteered, to, first of all, because without judges, we have no sports, we have no shows, and you're trying to do your best. And why would you want the dogs to fail? Like, what's that? Like, I can't imagine that's a fun day when like every dog flunks. Like, oh my God. Like, I
Utility
think judges.
A.
Yeah,
a.
judges
oh
won. Like, I know when I'm spectating and I'm watching, I'm like, come on, dog, come on. Yep. And then the dog, I'm like, oh, so
yeah.
close.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's an unfortunate, like, mentality in the sport. And I think it's because people have just got to remember, A, everybody is just a human being.
And we're doing the best they can.
Exactly. Doing the
and
very
the dogs
best
too.
They can.
No dog wakes up in the morning and says, I know we're traveling halfway across the country to this big competition, and I'm going to show my mother just how much I can screw up in the ring.
Yep.
I think that,
doing that.
I think that's a big piece. I think especially with people who are just starting out in showing dogs or, you know, I think that they do have a misconception, like that the judges that are judging in the ring that particular day have had never had struggles of their own, have never shown an off breed, have all gone to the NOC in place, have all gotten Otches super fast. I think there's a misconception there that you guys are just like everybody else in your own dog training careers. Like you've been in their shoes when the dog won't set up. You've been in our shoes when the dog flunks yep. 16 times in utility. Like you understand. Like, I think that's a big thing.
My first UD dog, it took 22 trials to get her UD.
Yeah.
That's what people need to hear.
Spread
because
out over 3 years, I showed her five times. She enqueued five times. I stopped showing her. I trained for another year. I showed her five times that year. She flunked five times. Mm-hmm. Stopped showing her, which is a big deal. Stop showing your dog if they're not passing. Mm-hmm. She qualified on the 11th try. And then on her 21st try, she qualified. And I told her, if you pass tomorrow, I'm never going to ask you to do this again. She was getting older anyway, but yeah, on her 22nd trial, she finished her UD, and I said, say goodbye to everybody.
That's
UD,
it.
UD, UD done.
Yeah. But yeah. I want to say something about spectators too, whether they're the competitors spectating outside the ring.
Mm.
People are unaware of how much their voices carry.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're whispering at ringside? I can hear you. And you can make sure that I have very good hearing. And the competitor, if you're laughing, they don't know if you're laughing about what your dog just did or somebody mm-hmm. told a good joke, mm-hmm. right? And how you behave as a fellow competitor has an influence on what happens in the ring.
Yeah.
Now, some people are very good at putting on the blinders. And they don't hear it. They don't see it. They're oblivious to it because they're so right. focused on what
that
they're
takes
doing
a lot
dog.
Of time, though. That's
it takes
hard.
A lot of time, and it's really yeah. easy. But it happened at a trial a couple of months ago. The handler's dog broke on the recall and ran to her, and people outside the ring started laughing. She was mortified,
oh,
absolutely mortified, to the point where she was telling everybody she's never going to show an AKC again. Okay, that's horrible. Really, really horrible.
And who knows, maybe they weren't even laughing. You know, that's such a good point, because maybe they weren't even laughing at her, but they're not paying attention. Because a lot of times, I know when I'm standing there, we're BSing about something else
right.
and kind of sort of watching.
Yeah.
So that's a really good point.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, because people are so self-conscious, right?
Yeah.
And when their dog struggles, they're like embarrassed and they
right.
feel terrible. And they feel like, meanwhile, people like us, everything's happened. Like, we've done it all. Like, we flunked every way possible, made every mistake possible.
But most of what they see is the other end of the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
That even when you enqueue, it looks better than what they imagine their own dogs is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm a judge. I'm an instructor. I teach classes at Masterpiece. And I'm an exhibitor. I show my dogs. So I wear all three hats. And I lost the point I was going to make.
That's all right.
It'll come back or not. It couldn't have been that important, right?
No, but I think you have a unique perspective because you understand all the different aspects because you wear all the different hats, right? Like it's kind of like until I start judging, I have absolutely no right to ever critique a judge because I'm not judging, you know? So, yeah, that's another one of my like pet peeves where I'm like, well, you're not judging. So how can you critique what they're doing? You know,
there are some things that are blatant.
Well, I know, but you know what?
Occasionally, but for the most part, the judges, listen, everybody that shows up at that building that day plans to do the best they can.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
That's all it is. Everybody's, including the dog. I'm going to do the best I can for you, Mom. I hope it's good enough. 300%. And if not, I hope you still love me.
Yeah, 300%. No.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. So the biggest compliment that people ever pay me is if I come out of the ring and they say, congratulations, I say, thank you. That's all I ever say. Somebody says congratulations to me, I say, thank you. And then when the judge is pinning the class, they go, how come you're not in there? And I go, it's because we didn't qualify. And they go, really? I couldn't tell by the way you behaved that you did not qualify. And that means that I did my job for my dog, that I told him, I'm there for you. Come on, we can do this. We can get through this. You made a mistake. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it later.
Cry out in the parking lot. But
in the parking lot. Take it outside.
Yeah. We talk about that. Lori and I talk about that all the time. But now that you mentioned that, I'm like, boy, we talk about that all the time. And like, I'm not going to lie. I do not sit there and watch dog after dog after dog. I just don't. So then I'm like, oh, goodness. Like, if you're judging, you must see that constantly where people are like upset or frustrated.
Yep.
And they let the dog know, or they let the dog flounder and they don't help the dog. And you must see so much of that.
Yeah.
Totally. Obviously, mostly in the A classes, right? By the time you're in the B classes, you have a little bit more understanding of how what you show in the ring is going to have an effect on how your dog behaves in the future.
I don't know, man. I see plenty of people.
Oh, and I've had to very, very quietly go up to people and say, you need to stop doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
don't swear at your dog in the ring. Please don't swear at your dog in the ring.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, well. It happens.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise, that would not be good. See, that's another reason I can't be a judge. Because my zipper,
arrested.
That mouth
You'd get
zipper,
arrested.
The mouth zipper is broken. Stuff would be flying out of my mouth.
AKC would be like, another email about Paige Ford.
Yeah, you do have to bite your tongue sometimes, but if I have something that I really, really need to point out to somebody, I will either ask them to please come and talk to me when the class is over.
Yeah.
Or if it's somebody like you, Lori, I might go up to you and go, you did this or that or the other thing. Oh, shit. Thanks for telling me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Like I've had every once in a while a judge come up and just be like, hey, I just want to tell you where I scored you. You know, which is nice because, again, they're just trying to be, like, nice or helpful or whatever.
But I cannot give training advice in the ring for a number of reasons. Number one, it's not my job.
Right.
Number two, I don't know you. I don't know your dog. I don't know your training style. I don't know what your background is. I don't know how much experience you have. Right. I don't know if you're going to bite my head off for saying something to you. So I do have to zip it.
And like you said, that's really not your job. No, my pet peeve is like something that just makes me insane is the whole sportsmanship, right? Like, I'm like, it's on the front page of every catalog, but clearly a lot of people don't read it. But yeah, and how we treat the judges and the stewards who are volunteers. And then,
yes, thank you.
God forbid we have a steward and it, quote unquote, doesn't know what they're doing. Yeah. Well, you know what? You do it then, because the reason we have a steward that, quote unquote, doesn't know what they're doing is because it's almost impossible to get stewards. So they're going to make mistakes. So what? They're going to be slow sometimes. So what? Sometimes they're going to be distracted and the judge is going to be saying gloves, gloves, or articles. So what? Like, I've had judges go, oh God, oh God. And I'm like, it's fine. Like, yeah. It's totally fine. If they're like trying to get the steward, maybe the steward's talking and they're looking at me and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I go, it is totally fine.
Okay. But you know,
right.
You go and you set up for gloves and the judge, and you stand there. You just stand there, and your dog has to understand that nothing is happening yet, but you have to sit there, hold your position, don't get up, don't squiggle around, don't scoot over there thinking that you're going to turn any second. No, you train for it, and you train for a judge that talks too much right before the exercise starts. Mm-hmm. But the dog, so stays. I don't miss stays personally, but I think but people train their dogs to stay better. But just the act of sitting there waiting for the next thing to happen, that's part of it. The judge is going to give you some kind of instructions. They're going to, or you just have to wait. You know, it's the oldest, slowest steward that's putting out gloves.
Well, it's also the expectation. Like, people, like you, I do not have the expectation that everything is going to go perfectly in the ring, right? In terms of ring procedure. Like, I do not have the expectation that I did a webinar. I can't remember what it was called. So it's basically the whole point of the webinar was expect that there is going to be a delay outside the ring. Expect that there is going to be a conflict on the board. Expect that things are not going to go smoothly in the ring. And if you have that expectation, then you prepare for that. Then you have a plan in place, right? So I gave suggestions, different things you could do for each scenario, so that when that happens, instead of you freaking out and it messing up the dog and then you getting annoyed and frustrated, you're like, okay, no problem. Don't worry about it.
We did it in training. Your dog understands that sometimes it doesn't happen right away.
Right. Yeah. So
here's the thing. Here's a thing that I see too often on signals in particular. I know it's a super challenging exercise for the handlers and the dogs. It's really challenging. Okay. When people train by themselves and they don't have somebody to tell them to take their time, when they train, the second they turn around, they drop their dog. As soon as the dog's on the ground, they have them sit. As soon as the dog sits, they call them in. And it happens that fast. Mm-hmm. Okay. As a judge, in my head, I count. Stand your dog, 1, 2, 3. That's how fast I count. But it's 1, 2, 3. Leave your dog. You get to the other end of the ring. You turn around. 1, 2, 3. I signal you to drop your dog. 1, 2, 3. Sit your dog. 1, 2, 3. Call your dog. If you do it too fast in training all the time, if there's a delay in the judge giving you the signal to do the next position, your dog's going to anticipate because it happens 1, 2, 3. They pattern it. They say, I know what's going to happen next. Yes, darling, I know that you know what's going to happen next, but you have to wait until the judge tells me so I can tell you. Right? So building that delay in. On all the exercises where we're moving away from the dogs and then something else is going to happen, you have to build in that delay that's going to happen. I'm looking to see if your dog is going to anticipate, which is why I do that. Mm-hmm. On the straight recall, turn around, face your dog. I breathe in, I breathe out, I give you a cue to call your dog, right? They have to learn to expect delays in everything that they do because it happens.
Yeah, well, every judge is different too, right? They're going to call it differently. And
that's right. That's right. Dumbbells. Yeah. Can we talk about dumbbells for a second?
Sure.
Don't worry if your dumbbell goes awry. I'm very liberal in giving people rethrows. Don't tell me that your dog can get it. I know your dog can get it, but I'm very liberal. I have clear criteria for how, especially on the high jump, how far off sides it will be before I have you do a rethrow. I want your dog to succeed. If it bounces hard to the right, that's the worst when it bounces right. When it bounces left, it's not quite so bad because most dogs turn clockwise when they pick up their dumbbell. So they may get the high jump in their line of sight when they turn. But if it bounces to the right, oh my God, when they pick it up, now the straight line is back without including the jump. But don't worry, practice throwing your dumbbell on different kinds of surfaces. So you have some control, but once it hits the ground, they have a mind of their own and they go where they want. But you have to have your dog prepared for the judge to say exercise finished and know what you're going to do when that happens. Are you going to have your dog sit there? Are you going to break them out of their sit and set them up again? What are you going to do? And you have to have practiced that. Have somebody bring you back your dumbbell and hand it to your dog again without your dog jumping up to grab the dumbbell. I don't like that.
And if you're like me, you better train for 7 rethrows.
Oh, me too. I'm the queen. Esther, I think I was under you up at the qualifier last year. I'm like, oh my gosh. I think we're on 5.
Yeah, 9 is the most I've ever had.
That's hilarious. I think when it was literally one of Zesty's open legs, he was that inexperienced. And the way the ring was set up, the jump was like closer to the back of the ring. So it wasn't in the center. So I was like, if I don't throw it all the way to the end of the ring, it's going to be too short for a big, fast dog. I don't want him to get hurt. And then, so I threw it at the ring like 5 or 6 times. And when it was all done, the judge is like, I can't believe your dog never anticipated. And then later in the day, she says to me, I still can't believe your dog never anticipated.
Good dog. Good dog.
I was like, yeah, those stupid dumbbell though. So I'm going to tell this super random story just because it's kind of funny.
It popped in your head?
Well, it popped in my head at the very beginning when you said that judges should be kind. So I'm not going to say who it was, who the exhibitor was, or who the judge was. It was a long time ago. It was an exhibitor, very, very, very beginner person, like basically novice A, right? With this dog. I'm trying to remember if it was the first dog or the second dog. Either way, dog wasn't super well trained. Oh, I know. It was a breed dog that he trained. Like the dog was like way older already. And all he wanted to do was just get like the title on her, right? So disastrous run. I wasn't there. And the judge says to him when he's done, you know, like, where do you go for lessons? PetSmart? Oh, and he was trading with me.
No. No way.
And the thing is, it was not nice. And I was so, I was so grateful because this person was kind of like oblivious and just thought it was like a weird thing to say. And I'm like, oh my God, you can't say that to beginners. That. Like it's kind of exactly what you said is it's so important for them. Just find something nice to say. Your dog's coat is beautiful. Look how shiny it is or something just so that, because were it someone more fragile, they could well have just been like, I'm out, man. I'm not doing this sport.
Well, that happens. You
know, obedience has a bad right now.
Well, yeah.
About being an unfriendly, unwelcoming sport.
It is.
To a degree, it is. You know, there people have their little cliques of the people they hang out with. And
yeah.
I can't move my crate. There's no right, you know. where are you going to put your crate? Well, no, I'm not moving. If you want a crate spot, you need to be here at 7 o'clock in the morning. The other thing that I'm sorry the AKC did was the to follow. The class is to follow after lunchtime. So who's showing in the afternoon? The novice people.
The novice
people.
Yeah. They haven't got
the faintest idea when they should show up.
Yeah. So they
come to the show. This happens at Masterpiece all
way
the time.
Too
come
early.
To the show early. They don't have a crate for the dog. And the dog hangs out with them all
day.
For 2, 3, 4 hours until they go in the ring.
Yeah.
And the dog is completely used up.
Yeah.
If you can't crate in the building, sit in the car with the dog. Don't subject them to that. The beginner dogs, they just absolutely melt down. They come into the building and they're horrified at how much activity there is, mm-hmm. how many dogs there are that they never saw before. The atmosphere can be thick if there are a lot of good competitors, particularly, because it is a competitive thing. People do want those colored ribbons and they want their Otch points and what have you.
I always wish they didn't like
the to follow.
I don't know why they don't do novice first, right? Because then it's super clear for the novice people when they have to get there.
Yep.
And then
I
just
agree.
Do open and utility, because those people, A, were already invested in the sport. We're already addicted. We're going to come no matter what time. We're much better at judging how much time we need.
Yep.
Our dogs are all crate trained. They're all used to being in a crate, like, all day and then coming out and working.
Yep.
Right.
So it's such a weird trend that they don't do novice people in the morning, they are more likely to stick around and watch.
Yeah. I agree. For sure.
And then get inspired to keep going, find a way to get better instruction if they need it.
And also I think too, there's more experienced people around to help them. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time novice happens, the place
Everybody's gone.
Right. Which is creepy too.
It's creepy.
Right? Even at the end there, there's practically nobody there.
Yeah.
Right.
Echo chamber.
Right.
I saw in the video, you know, it was a pretty empty place at that point.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. It is crazy. But so as a judge, I am rooting for every team that comes in my ring. I believe most judges want everybody to qualify.
I agree.
And most of us do it because we love the sport. We love to give back. We love the interaction with the exhibitors. We love to see unusual breeds in the ring.
You have a sense of humor in the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's important. It does help when something goes awry and, you know, mistakes are going to happen. I think it does, like when the judge sort of just gives a little chuckle, I think people feel better because it's just, you're relatable that way, you know?
Yeah. And listen, I'm not perfect. I've made plenty of mistakes as a judge.
If it's fixable,
sometimes it's fixable. Most of the time it's not. And I'm sorry.
You know what? Everybody makes mistakes. Like, you know, if you're casting stones, and you better never have made a mistake in your life. And everybody makes mistakes. Like it's just impossible. Nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes all the time. Like everybody needs to just chill out and relax. Like
that's right. Chill out and relax.
There you go. If you're critiquing someone for making a mistake, like you've never made a mistake, then wow, you're a pretty special person. Cause I know I make mistakes all the time.
I have these silicone bracelets that I give to a lot of my students. It says, it's just a dog show. Don't freak out or anything.
It's great.
I always say it's just a dog show. It's not world peace.
It's like, not world peace.
Get over it.
And I understand that where we live, it's not the same in every part of the country. Trials can be far and few between, but around here where you live, there's another show next week
mm-hmm.
in two weeks, in a month. Right. You can always go mm-hmm. and try again.
Yeah.
And do better. Do better. But I do encourage people who love the sport, who have put at least a UD on a dog. Although now, if you've put a CDX on a dog, you can get approved to judge novice. So that's a big change also. But I encourage people try it. Volunteer to judge at matches, at run-throughs. Practice calling commands and writing stuff just on a sheet of paper. You don't even need an official score sheet. Just practice when you're even with your friends. Call commands and write down what you see. And then you can discuss it and you can practice where's a better place to stand. There are plenty of opportunities for us that train with other people to practice in a more formal way. I know, Lori, you're interested in being a judge. I encourage you in her free time.
Yeah, please. Until I really found out what really the amount of time it takes, and you know, but yeah,
but you can apply to judge novice.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you do have to steward some, and I would encourage you. So when you show in the morning, you show open and utility, then it's novice. Sit at ringside with paper and pen and score what you see. Even if you're not going to discuss it with the judge.
Yeah.
You can then go look at the judge's sheet.
Novice is actually like when I was really thinking about doing it, I was like, novice is what scares the shit out of me.
It's so hard.
I would look at it and be like, to people, I'd be like, how do you score that? Like, I didn't, you know what I mean? It's a little more black and white as it, you know, the more experienced classes. So that's where I was like, wow, I give them a lot of credit.
Next time I see you, we can talk about that some more.
Okay.
Happy to push you along the path. Because listen, I'm 71 years old. I'm not planning on stopping judging, but I'm 71 years old.
Yeah.
And we need younger judges, not young judges, but younger judges. So I encourage people to try. Practice when it doesn't matter, when it doesn't count. And talk to judges. Listen, people that show frequently have some kind of a passing relationship with the judge. I know, Petra, you and I haven't spoken much, but I think I'm approachable. I think you're approachable.
My thing. I'm like under a microscope, and I have this weird thing like that I always feel really self-conscious. Like if I go up, let's say, I always say, thank you for judging or good morning and that. But I feel like if I go, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. People are going to assume
you're sucking up to the judge.
Exactly. I'm sucking up to the judge. So I always try to be very professional, good morning. How you doing? Perfunctory. That's it.
Yep.
You know, I thank every single steward every time. All business. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for judging. If they come up and want to talk to me, I'm not going to not talk to you, but even when someone I know well, like Kathy Walker or even you, after this conversation, if you're judging, I'll be like, good morning. I'll be like, oh God, if I talk to her, they're going to be like, oh, she had a podcast.
You also try to stay in the zone for your dog.
It's true.
Right?
It's true.
Especially, God, I can't imagine showing two dogs at the NOC. You have to stay so in the zone. You have to stay so hyper-focused on what you're doing that would not be the time that I would come up to you and say, Petra, I'm having trouble getting my dog to set up straight. What can I do? Can you give me any help? No, go away. Don't talk to me. There was a woman.
I would never say that.
In the early 80s, she showed a lovely little golden retriever. She walked around the show with headphones on. Before it was everybody's wearing their earbuds, their whatever. And one time at a show, I asked her what she was listening to. I said, are you listening to motivational tapes? Are you listening to music? She said, I'm not listening to anything. She said, I have the end of this cord in my pocket. She said, but if I'm wearing my headphones, nobody bothers me.
That's right.
They leave me alone. And top competitors want to keep their focus, stay in the zone, make sure that they know exactly what they're going to do when they go in the ring. So there are different levels there. But yeah, earbuds. Most people, you point at your ear and people will walk away.
I did that for years, mainly because not even for that. I can't take the negativity.
Yeah,
I can't. Walk in the door and it's like, It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too bright. It's too dark. The ring's too crooked. This isn't where it's supposed to be. That's not where it's supposed to be. This isn't there. That I'm like, oh my
Shut
goodness.
The fuck up.
So one time, basically. One time I said to somebody, somebody comes up and starts complaining to me. And I said, you know, I've decided that today I'm only going to talk about positive things. And they walked away. Like, cause they literally, yeah, it was great. I'm like, oh, that worked. Right. Cause like, but then after a while, I was like, I don't even want to hear it behind me or around me.
Me too.
Like, I just don't want to hear it at all. Now I'm at the point where I literally don't even hear it. Like, I'm so used to tuning stuff out that, but that's what I more.
Skill. That's wore, a hard earned skill.
Yeah.
To do
but
that.
That's what I wore them for a lot of years.
Right. That's what this gal was doing.
To
she
tune
didn't want
that
people
out.
To bother her.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to hear all that craziness. Like, just again, not world peace. You know, every trial is different. Every trial has whatever. I just don't want to hear it. Just be happy, be nice, be positive.
Nice.
Thank
it's just
the stewards.
A dog show.
That's right. Thank your stewards and appreciate them. Thank the judges and appreciate them. Show good sportsmanship. Show gratitude and appreciation. If things don't go well.
I thank the exhibitors for showing to me. People have choices every single weekend. They have choices, right? Mm-hmm. They can do obedience. They can do agility. They can, every sport that's out there, every weekend, people have choices. So I try and make my ring a welcoming place, and I thank people for showing to me because they don't have to. Mm-hmm. They don't have to. I know sometimes. Yeah. I know there are people who won't show to me, and I'm perfectly okay with
that's
that.
That's okay.
But I can tell if there are two trials on the weekend and you entered under that judge on Saturday, but I'm teaching judging those classes on Sunday, and you did not enter under me.
Well, you know what? You just can't. I just don't worry about
can't make
people.
Everybody happy.
That's
you
right.
Can't.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
Absolutely.
Thankless it's impossible. Job to try.
Yeah.
No. Try.
I agree.
But we appreciate you and we appreciate
we
you taking the time to come
Thank
and talk
you.
To us. We appreciate your judging.
Yeah.
We appreciate all the judges out there. We appreciate all the stewards out there.
It's what makes up the sport.
Yep, and we just
it does.
Encourage
need to
everybody to be
people
nice.
People need to volunteer and think about becoming a judge. It's not all tedium. It's not. It's not. Yeah, I encourage people. And anybody that wants to can message me. You can find me easily on Facebook Messenger. I answer questions from anybody. For people who do FDSA, I actually started a subgroup. It's called the Nitty Gritty of the Rules and Regs.
Oh, that's
it's
nice.
A good place.
Oh, that's
to,
cool.
Yeah, it's a cool
that's
place to go
cool.
To ask
that's
your questions.
That's super nice of you to do that.
Because the people who are on there will only give you good advice and nice advice.
Nice
Nobody
advice,
Nobody will ever
yeah.
say, "You, what are you, stupid? Go find it in the Rules and Regs." Nobody will say that. But it's FDSA, Nitty Gritty of the Rules and Regs.
Yeah
cool.
That's super
awesome.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right. Well, listen, I hope
All
to
right,
see
guys.
Both of you sometime in the near future.
Yes,
and, definitely. Good to see you. It's good to see you, Esther.
Good. Thank you. It's good to be seen. Yeah. I'm happy to be here. I'm in a unique position of being extremely grateful still to be here.
Good.
So, yeah.
Good. Well, we're
All right. Thank you again
here.
for inviting me to do
oh,
this. With wicked
our
fun.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
It was
wicked
pleasure.
Fun.
Thank
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, everybody. Happy
Bye.
Training.